Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Hello and welcome.
Ready? Okay.
Welcome back to Double Play, where Brandon Walker and I talk about sports movies, one good, one bad. Well, in theory, one good, one bad, every episode. This is Double Play, where we take a look at the best and the worst of sports movies. See how much better that sounds?
That's better, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should intro it. I don't like the intro.
I tried to just now and you got mad.
I don't like being, because I wasn't ready. I was adjusting myself. I don't like being the main guy. I don't like being the, like, even doing a final answer guy and doesn't. I don't like doing that. I always like kind of being.
Not me, brother. I'm comfortable being the star.
I'm fine with it. I just want to make
it. I'm the straw that stirs a drink, baby. That's what I am.
I'd rather be the drink.
That almost sounded sexual. All right, so yeah, Double Play, where we talk about one great movie.
In theory.
And one terrible movie.
Also in theory.
But in practice has held up.
And it will today.
And it will today. It will today and it will for the foreseeable future as far as I can tell.
I don't know. I know it will today. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, so today, let's just go over, if I assume these are all in order. So we have done on this show, we have done Moneyball paired with Ed.
Yes.
We have done Hoosiers paired with Whoopi Goldberg's Eddie.
Yes.
We have done the third one, basketball.
Hoosiers?
No,
it's football. And it's
this is our fourth one.
Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights and Draft Day.
Yes.
That's what we did last week.
Kevin Costner's draft.
So now we will be repeating a sport for the first time. That doesn't mean we're not going to get to other sports like boxing, like golf.
That you're telling the audience what the sports are in case they didn't know.
We haven't got to them yet, but we are repeating a sport for the first time.
We are.
We're going back to the baseball well.
We are, which we'll be doing probably quite a bit. There's more baseball movies than any other.
I think I wrote out 37 decent baseball movies one time.
Wow, really?
And maybe 10 to 15 just good to great ones.
Wow.
That's way more than any other sport.
Yes.
Way more.
Yes.
Basketball and football, you're lucky to scrape five. Boxing gets close.
And we have a lot of good, we have a lot of great boxing.
We haven't touched the Rocky series yet.
We haven't.
Yeah. So we'll have to do that at some point.
Boxing, the only one that has Best Picture winners.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Million Dollar Baby and Rocky.
Yeah.
Although Field of Dreams was nominated for Best Picture. The Babe was not.
It was not.
No.
Probably wasn't in serious consideration.
I don't think so.
And
no.
Even more of a stamp on this being a bad movie, John Goodman not nominated for Best Actor because, my God, he's bad in it.
He's not even the worst part of the movie.
He's not the worst part of it, but...
He's terrible.
We're going to get to the... Okay, today, have we even said it? Field of Dreams and The Babe.
The Babe.
Field of Dreams coming out in 1988. The Babe coming out in 1992. Was it 88 or 89?
89, I think.
You sure it wasn't the end of 88? Was it the February? Was it the spring of 89?
I thought it was 89. Let's see.
I thought Major League was 89, and I don't think they came out the same year. I think he released Bull Durham Field of Dreams in the same year.
You are wrong, again.
It is 89.
It is 89. May of 89.
May of 89.
May 5th.
That sounds like a hell of a – can you just pull up box office for May 5th, 1989? Because I'm thinking you might have been able to see Batman.
Was June 23rd.
Probably early to see Batman. You know that?
Yep.
Just off the top of your head?
It's the day I moved to New Hampshire.
Probably too early to see Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
And Ghostbusters 2 that same summer.
Those are the three, right?
But
Parenthood came out in August. I know that.
Field of Dreams came out before any of those.
Maybe Honey, I Shrunk the Kids might have been in the
maybe
in theaters. I'm trying to figure out what would have been in theaters May 5th, 1989. Awakening? No, not Awakening. It's
that was 90.
Scanners.
Awakenings is 90.
Something. Huh.
I'm going to find out here shortly.
Box Office Mojo, you hadn't pulled it up yet?
Well, I had for The Babe, not for this. You could have done this beforehand, too.
I sure could have. Well, don't get off The Babe, because we'll come to that later, too.
So, here's Pet Sematary.
Never saw it. Don't watch horror movies.
K-9.
Good movie. There were two... These always fascinates me when there's twin movies that come out, like
Turner
Armageddon
Hooch.
And Deep Impact and Volcano and Dante's Peak. There were two buddy cop dog movies
and 1989. Turner and Hooch and K-9. And K-9 was the better movie.
In its fourth week in release, Major League.
Major League.
Two baseball movies.
Major League and Field of Dreams were in the box office at the same time? It's weird because I remember Major League coming out. I saw it twice in the theater. And I was 10, and I remember it being a big deal. And my mom took me once, and my dad took me. I don't remember Field of Dreams coming out at all.
Same exact experience for me.
Yeah.
My friends and I were all talking about Major League. It was like I was in fourth grade at the time. It was a big movie.
You were calling somebody on your team Wild Thing.
Oh, yeah. And all of it. But my friends and I never talked about Field of Dreams.
I don't know that I really was aware of Field of Dreams. I can just remember going to my buddy's house, my best friend at the time named Jason, being in his house in like the winter, like November, December, and him having a tape and saying, "Oh, everybody's talking about this movie, Field of Dreams. They're ghosts in it or whatever. They're coming. They live in the corn." I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And ended up watching it. And let's just get it out here right now. Where is this movie when it comes to your sentimentality or just your love of movies? How far up is Field of Dreams?
I like this movie more the older I get. Some of the themes in it just hit me so much harder from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
It's at the point. So I put it on last night, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to have it in the background. I've seen it 10 million times. I got other stuff I need to do. That theory lasted, which usually I sit down and watch all these lights off, and I'm like, I've seen this so many times. I just got shit to do. The credits started. The first couple notes of James Horner score came out. I'm like, yep. And sure enough, I didn't move from my couch for the hour and 47 minutes.
It's not a movie that is content to stay in the background.
This movie isn't just a great sports movie. This movie isn't just the best baseball sports movie. This is my favorite sports movie ever. In fact, I think it's in my top 10 of all time. A period, full stop. I love this movie so much. I have so much affection for it. It all welled up again yesterday. I watch it every year, but
yeah.
I don't know, man. It hit me last night again.
It is this is a cliche about movies, but it's truly like a warm blanket. It's a comfortable movie. It's a movie that places you in a good frame of mind. It places you in the right sentimental, you know, mood. And depending on what your baseball / relationship was with your dad or is with your dad, anybody watching, it's going to hit you at some point in this movie. It might hit you early. It might hit you late when they're having a catch. But it's going to hit you. It's going to get you every time. Every single time.
Oh yeah.
They throw that ball together and you see that line of cars and that music's playing as it fades.
I'm starting to get
goosebumps on my arm right now.
Like a tiny bit choked up just thinking about it.
It is a beautiful fucking movie, and I find I kind of do the opposite of you. The longer I go, the older I get, the more it falls down my sports movie list if I'm just listing sports movies without having watched them recently. But every time I throw Field of Dreams, it's like, oh yeah, okay. This is why I look, because there was a. I would say from 1990, 1989, to maybe 2004, 2005. I would have said this is my favorite movie. Done.
Full stop here.
And then I got older, and then there were other movies. Yeah. You know, I have other favorite movies outside of sports, like Best in Show, I turn this on, and I'm just, I love it. I love it from start to finish.
Yes.
And it's a. It's an awesome fucking movie.
There's two things that really hit me hard is the dad stuff. My dad died in 1994. He's been gone a very long time, almost 30 years now, which is crazy. And it, you know, as time goes on, I know you just lost your dad pretty recently. The good news is like when your dad's been gone a long time or your parents been gone a long time, it's so hard at first. But then you start to just focus more on the good times than the grief. So it does get easier as it goes along, but you never stop missing them. I think about my dad every single day. I guess that probably happened until I die. Your parents are so important to you.
Yeah.
And this hits that connection because as a son, we've all had like falling outs of our fathers. And like, you know, that son-father relationship is so complicated and so tough to kind of get a handle on that. And that's what happens here with his dad. But at the end of the day, you love that person so much. And you just want to, when they're gone for so long, you just want to spend more time with them. And to have that ability, which Kevin Costner's character does, it's just like, oh, boy, does it hit you right in the heart.
Well, I'll try to capture in a 4 or 5 sentences the emotional ride it takes you through with him and his dad, right? Like, Kevin Costner, Ray Kinsella, the character, as he is living his life, both resents his father, doesn't like his father, idolizes his father, worships his father. His father is dead, and he has this crazy – it's all manifested in this crazy scenario where he hears these voices. If you build it, he will come. And he's building – he builds a baseball field in the middle of his corn pasture and all this stuff. But it, but you see just throughout the whole movie, he is trying to not be his father very hard. At the same time, he is being his father. And he is manifesting his father's dreams, which are really his dreams, because he is his dad's son. And then at the end, it's just – the idea that you would metaphorically stand in a field looking across at the man that is your father.
Yeah.
The idea that you would be face to face with this man at 20 years old before you're a glimmer in his eye or glint in his eye.
Yeah.
It ain't about baseball. It's about dads.
No. And it's a lot about dads. It's a lot about dreams. Yeah. And, so I'm now older than my father ever was, which is such a weird fucking statement. It's such a weird thing to wrap my head around. That happened back in August. And it's because you always, you know, you can't help but kind of compare yourself to your dad as you get older or whatever. So I to see your father young and be able to talk to him, and you can see the father's reaction too. He kind of knows that he's Ray's dad, and they just have that catch, and it's wordless, but yet so much is said, and just Costner plays it so brilliantly. He doesn't get enough credit for what a great actor he is, and in my opinion, he's never better than in this movie.
Yeah,
and he's never better than those last 5 minutes. He gets angry. He's not allowed to go in the cornfield, which you can completely understand.
Yeah,
because he wants to go where Terrence Mann's going, and then he has that moment with his dad, and he doesn't overdo it. It feels very real, and that's why it hits all of us guys so much, especially because it feels like how we would react.
But he's hitting the movie's hitting you from all corners, not just the dad, because the dad is the central focus, but it's the supportive wife that he has.
Yes.
It's the asshole brother of the wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's the daughter who is just all aboard for everything this man wants to do. It is every relationship he has is interwoven in this story, and there's moments of time where you spend 5 minutes really hammering on why this relationship is important and this relationship, but at the end of the day, it all funnels back to him trying to make his dad proud and stuff like that.
That's all. To go down to kind of our natural why we do it, I think it's a lot of reasons why we do anything in this world. At the end of the day, the core reason is to make our parents and make our families, our wives, or our children, whatever, proud of us.
It's you know, the if you've never seen the movie, which I just would be shocked if anybody watching had never seen it. I almost feel like these conversations we have are not introductions to movies. They're just you sit down and let's remember them together, right?
Yeah, of course.
But if you've never seen this movie and everything we're saying, it sounds like this is a movie about a man and his dad, but there are so many other elements where he gets this crazy idea just in the middle of a life that isn't that successful, but he's trying to just uproot it all and build a baseball field in the middle of his corn. It's a fantasy is what it is.
It is, but it's a fantasy. I think a lot of – so this, I think, intertwines so well with the other part of this movie that really hits me is the Moonlight Graham stuff.
Yeah.
So this is a man that had, you know, like – Costner says, and the movie, the screenplay is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like he got so close to his dreams and he just brushed him by. And, you know, Brandon and I are so lucky. Like, and we kind of tease each other, or whatever, but like at the end of the day, we're both talking about, we're getting paid to talk about movies.
Right.
Like, we're able to live our dreams.
Yeah.
Like, this is amazing. And for Brandon and I, it happened kind of late in our lives. Like, I got this job a year ago. I was 42.
Yeah.
Like, Brandon, I know you got in here pretty late too, like in your life. And,
I was 39,
and, Yeah, like, so I think we appreciate it more than someone if we got it when we were younger. And so you see the Moonlight Graham stuff, and you're like, oh, but – and then he says, like, at the end when he's like, oh, the real crime would have been if I had never been – the real tragedy if I'd never been a doctor.
Yeah.
And he values that more than the bit he – but he, when he's talking to Burt Lancaster in this, you know, 1972, you can tell that Burt Lancaster really wanted that chance to have that at bat.
But what it does is it takes these people that we've seen their lives play out, and it takes them back to when they were young. It gives them a chance to enjoy – to have the dreams, have everything they ever wanted. John Cancella gets to see his boy growing up. John Cancella gets to see his granddaughter. John Cancella gets to see this massive achievement. John Cancella gets to see cars for miles.
Yeah.
Coming to see Ray Kinsella's farm. Moonlight Graham gets to have that at bat. He gets to have, and that might be my favorite moment of the movie, when they're riding down the highway and him and Terrence Mann are talking and says, well, I need all the karma I can get. And he just pulls over because they've had the, for the first time in the movie, he's kind of failed.
Yeah.
He went to Boston to get Terrence Mann, and then it was go the distance. So they go to Minnesota, and he's unable to talk Dr. Graham out of going back.
Right.
And you think, oh, they failed for the first time. So they're driving back to Iowa. Oh, I need all the karma I can get. There's a kid thumbing his way back to Iowa, and he gets in and says, oh, I'm Archie Graham. And that the way the music hits at that point, or the way that it's like a drum beat or something. Doom,
yeah.
And you think, oh, wow. That's there's a lot of moments in this movie that are outstanding, but that really, really gets you.
Oh, my God.
And then when he can't go back.
That kills me. That makes me cry. The scene of the baseball, you know, when he's playing catch with his dad. But I started crying with the Moonlight Graham stuff. When he realizes he can't go back, but he seemed Dr. Graham seems fine with it. It's great though how the movie's so clever. Like, he never actually got that bat. It's a sacrifice fly, so it never counts as an at bat. But he did get that emotional at bat, and that's what we're supposed to see. All of those things, how they pay off, but they pay off in a fair and earned way, and that's I think what makes the movie so rewatchable for me. Is that I feel like everything these characters get, you feel like they deserve.
Well, they pay off in kind of reality. These are normal people, right?
Yes.
Like, Shoeless Joe Jackson is the ideal of this incredible player that is the hero of John Kinsella. Mm-hmm. The movie ain't about Shoeless Joe Jackson.
No.
Never was. He's in it. He's in it a lot. But the movie's about Moonlight Graham, who got this close to being a major league. It's about Terrence Mann, who enjoyed fame, but it didn't fit, or something went wrong. Ray Kinsella, who's trying to be his dad. John Kinsella, who kind of probably was a failure in life.
Joe got to have his dream. He got to go back and play again.
Yeah.
It is so much about dreams being fulfilled.
Field of Dreams. I mean, that's
right. It's funny, that title. It's like, to see, I don't know, when you get older and you realize how valuable life is and you only get your 80 years, and what are you going to do with those 80? And, you know, so many people, it's just all luck. Like, the only reason I'm sitting here is because of luck. It's 100%. Like, it's all, you can have all the talent in the world, but you don't get luck, you're fucked. Ray is such a good guy, and, you know, he like you said, he's kind of a failure. I don't know what he was doing before, then he runs his farm. He's not really a farmer. Yeah. You can see he's just trying.
Yeah.
He's got this great wife and great kid, but he's trying professionally.
Well, I think you can tell he's a fish out of water. Like, he doesn't really fit in this world because he is a... He went to school at Cal Berkeley.
Yeah.
And he married a hippie woman. And he's now living in Iowa in the 80s and running a farm. That's not who he is or who he wants to be.
You even see him in the grain shop. He doesn't fit in with those guys.
He doesn't fit in. They're all old. You know, they're weathered. And he's just a good-looking guy, and he's just not working. And he just says, you know, if you build it, he will come. Sure, let's build it. Let's see what happens. And he does that. If you build it, he will come. Ease his pain, which I still don't know how he figured that one out. What are the three voices?
The distance.
Go the distance. Yeah, and there you go. So it's a great movie. I do want to shout out. I think there's a lot of this might be the longest one we've had because there's a lot of little elements here that I think we need to get to.
Okay.
I think this is what launches Kevin Costner into super duper stardom. He was on a path. But I really think this Dances with Wolves is his next movie after this.
Yeah, I think Untouchables has to be.
I think Untouchables starts the hot streak, but I think this goes from stardom to superstardom.
Yeah, I think so. This movie...
He had this in Bull Durham in a year.
Yeah.
This is crazy. That's crazy.
So, I think Untouchables, Bull Durham, this, it's like, all right, that's a pretty good track. You're right. Dances with Wolves, and then, you know, then you have, like, JFK, and you have The Bodyguard.
Robin Hood. Then he's in these big summer blockbusters,
Right, before the fall of Waterworld. But, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, I guess this is probably what launches them. This movie didn't make $100 million. It wasn't a huge blockbuster, but it did pretty well.
I think this is one of the bigger VHS probably successes of all time.
Yeah.
And there's this tape was there. Everybody had the tape. This was VHS had really started, really taken hold of the home market, not just going and renting them, but of just being collectibles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think this, I don't know what a non-sports movie would be, but. This is one of the most successful VHSs of all time, if I just had to guess.
Yeah, I think the most successful was Batman, which came out in 89. See, so we kind of
right around
that
same
trend.
Thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's just VHS, and then I want to give a shout out to a lot of the actors in this movie because while Costner is great, and we can circle back to Costner, Amy Madigan, who plays the wife, is fabulous.
It's the anti Barbara Hershey from Hoosiers.
Yeah,
like not a wet blanket, super supportive, but also realistic. She's like. you know, I got it. Hey, I can't, you know, I think going to, I feel like it's a conversation my wife and I would have. I was like, oh, I want to do this. And I was like, I got to stop either just because we just have the money. Like,
yeah.
it seemed really real.
And she lets him build the baseball field. Then when it's time to go to Boston, she's like,
we can't afford it.
You can't go. I mean, I want you to go, but you can't go.
Yeah.
And that's when they have the crazy conversation on the stairs where they have the same dream where he's sitting on the first base side of Fenway. Is Fenway the one with the big green wall in right field? She's great. I think Timothy Busfield is fantastic.
He is so good. He's playing an asshole. He's so good in this. And then you see him, you know, if you watch Little Big League, he plays a very different role. So the fact that he has kind of that range, he's also was very good at that show, 30-something. Timothy Busfield is a really good actor, and he's really good in this.
He's also good in The West Wing.
He is, yes.
Yeah. But he's
great in this.
I talk about sports movie Hall of Famers a lot, and this is the GOAT. But Busfield has this in Little Big League, and I think that might get him in. Like, this is great.
I wouldn't argue it.
When he gets out of that Jeep at the end and walks across confidently and with his chest out, and they're swinging, and the guy wants to hit him, I love that.
By the way, there's no special effects. He had the balls to do that. That's pretty good. I wouldn't have the courage. He doesn't stop moving.
I just figured they didn't throw a ball.
No, that happened.
That ball actually came out?
That's what I watched the commentary of this a couple times years ago, and he said that was all legit, which is like, holy shit.
Yeah. James Earl Jones, it brings so much gravity. When James Earl Jones hits the scene, you're like, okay, well, a star is here now. A star is here, and he delivers in spades.
There's a small thing I want to mention of James Earl Jones real quick.
Yeah.
How good he is in this movie. So he's like, you've been kidnapped, Terrence. And he's like, oh, like, you're missing, Terrence.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I got to call my father. And Costner leaves. And he just has a scene where he says, what am I going to tell him? But the way he delivers the line is so natural. I think a weaker actor would be like, what am I going to tell him? But he's like, you know, almost like, this is all so fanciful. How would it even begin? And the way he does it is so natural.
Yeah.
And that speech at the end.
It's
oh, my God.
Well, that's an all-time sports movie moment. It's a natural flabbergasting that when he was saying, like, what do I tell him?
Yeah.
I like that. When they're interviewing the townspeople of Chisholm, Minnesota, and he's really – you know, he's very locked into him. I feel that. You know, James Earl Jones is my favorite James Earl Jones of all time, and he's been in a lot of things and obviously been a famous person for a very, very long time. But the speech at the end, oh, my favorite line in the whole movie. See, that's the kind of shit that people all the time blame on me. It's not my fault you wouldn't play catch with your father.
Right.
I love that line.
The stuff in Minnesota with the townspeople.
Yeah.
And they talk. I guess some of those people were people that knew the real Moonlight Grand. They're not actors. They were townspeople in Minnesota.
Hold on. This is something I didn't know.
Right.
Moonlight Grand story real?
Yeah. So
I thought it was for the movie.
It's in the book. It's from 1905. He played, not 1922.
Okay.
That's the only difference.
But he did not get in a bat.
He did not get in a bat. Now, I don't know if he became a doctor, but some people knew that kind of a doctor. They had brought people into town that knew a story similar to this, and they brought them in and they talked about their experiences with this person.
All right. So there's that. Now, Burt Lancaster is in this movie 3 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the two scenes, right? So, yeah.
3 minutes, and it is like the most fantastic 3 minutes of all time, just both of them. Especially the scene in his doctor's office. Better go. Alicia's going to start thinking I got a girl.
Yep.
God damn it, that scene is so good. From the moment Kevin Costner wipes off that tag that says 72, and he looks around and sees the Godfather on the marquee, and he sees Moonlight Graham walking, and he catches him. Burt Lancaster and Kevin Costner, that scene explodes off the goddamn screen. I could watch that all day, every day.
The score, the lighting, how he's in the fog, in the distance.
How he turns.
Like, all of it is perfect. You talk about a star. You're right. James Earl Jones does get that star treatment. I would say Lancaster gets the legend treatment.
Yeah.
Which is like, holy shit. Like, this is special.
Yeah.
You know, pay attention here. And then the conversation in the doctor's office when he's talking about getting so close to your dreams and how he's maybe a little bit frustrated about it, but doesn't have true regret.
Right.
It is also human and felt so real, and we all have dreams, and like that hits everybody in, like, you know, men and women, but it really hits the dreams of men, I think, specifically with this, because it is such a male-centric story.
Yeah.
With the dads and the sons and everything else, and I think it just hits you right in the heart. Moneyball is my favorite, I guess, baseball movie comes to my brain.
Yeah.
But this hits me in the heart. Like, maybe no other movie.
If you know, I know Moneyball is functionally a great movie, and it's made very well, but it doesn't get you going. It doesn't just take your soul and just, you know, squeeze it like this one does. This one gets you every time. Ray Liotta,
he's great.
Ray Liotta as fucking Shoeless Joe Jackson. The way his stare, the way he looks at you, like, that's perfect.
It feels like a ghost.
Yeah, it feels like a ghost. I often do nitpicks, and I got two or three.
All right.
And they're very small.
Okay.
Because this is a tremendous movie.
I have one.
You have one? Gooch is the producer's back.
Wow, how about that, huh?
How about that? We're actually treated like a real show now. Apparently, he's off Jeff D. Lowe's leash for a second. here are my nitpicks.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
The Nazi cow scene would have never happened. What I mean is, what's her name in the movie? Amy Madigan's character. It's Ray and Ray and Ray's wife.
I forget.
Ray and Ray's wife go to
Annie, the
right? Is it Annie?
Annie.
No, that's the Bull Durham.
I think it's Annie here too.
Anyway, they're talking about burning books.
It is Annie,
and they go down to the PTA meeting or the school board meeting where they're talking about burning books, and she stands up. She's educated at Cal Berkeley, and she said, "We're talking about burning books. We're talking about." And another wife is arguing with her, and step outside, you Nazi cow, stuff like that. 1980s Iowa, they are absolutely not cheering for the hippie from California. They're just not. So the Nazi cow scene never would have happened.
Seems a bit much too.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I guess we just all casually and willingly ignore that Shoeless Joe Jackson bats right-handed in this
care.
Movie.
Don't care?
Okay.
They asked Liotta about that, and Liotta said, "I'm a ghost." I think it's the right answer.
That's okay. That works.
Don't care about that.
For someone who wasn't really a natural farmer, for someone who wasn't, who didn't have any of this in his history, he built one hell of a baseball field.
He did.
I mean, son of a bitch. That mother, he had the lights.
Yep.
He had the fence. He had the lines were perfect. He built one. I mean, he built a perfect baseball field. I'm not sure that's realistic.
I'm okay. He had all day to do it. He had months to do it.
But again, we do have ghosts playing on the field.
We
so
do.
What are we going to do? And the last one, this one's really nitpicky. The first time he meets Joe, and he throws him the balls. And after he throws him the balls and Joe hits the balls, they're walking together. And Joe Jackson says, "What's with the lights?" As if he'd never seen a baseball game in a life.
Right.
Now, I know the player was banned after 1919. The man lived in 1951.
Right.
He was aware of night games. So that one always – he didn't die in 1919.
Yeah. And also, you know, they had lights in parks besides major leagues even before – right. So that doesn't really make any sense.
And then I guess when Archie gets there and he's looking at the players out there that are on the field, like, what's Mel Ott doing there? What's Gil Hodges doing there? Why? I never understood why we went from players in the 20s to players in like the 50s.
I guess maybe all those guys hang out. I'm fine.
Were they
with
all
that.
Dead at that point?
Yes.
Gil Hodges was dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Gil Hodges died in 1972. He was the manager of the Mets. It was spring training, and he they golfed, and he just dropped dead of a heart attack.
All right. Well, you shouldn't have known that immediately.
It was a big deal. He was the manager of 69 Mets.
The smallest nitpicks I've ever had.
Yeah.
Because I love everything about this goddamn movie.
The only thing I don't like, is a huge nitpick, is one line reading is the little girl right before James Earl Jones going to his monologue.
Yeah.
She's like, "They'll go on a vacation, see?" And it's like, I don't buy this.
Yeah.
That's the only thing where I get a little bit, I'm like, this is a bit much. But like I said, that's a small thing. Other than that, I think she's very good in the role.
Yeah.
It's not her fault. She's got that weird, like, brief monologue. Like, that's just not, no little kid could pull that off. But this is really nitpicking. I said this is going to get 100 out of 100. I'll say it right now. Like, this is one of my 10 favorite movies of all time. Do you like It's a Wonderful Life?
Never seen it.
Okay. So a lot of people do critique this movie. They say it's too sentimental. Frank Capra was director of It's a Wonderful Life, which I think you should see.
I'm not stupid. I understand who that is.
It's amazing. I can't believe we haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life.
You've never seen It's a Wonderful
Life?
Yeah,
that's pretty stupid, Brandon.
Why?
It's just one of those movies that always is on TV. It's every Christmas.
Okay. And I think you'd love it.
Okay, cool. I'm aware of what it is. I've never – it's Jimmy Stewart, right?
Yeah.
I've just never seen it.
Well, people do
– I haven't watched – now, I've watched certain movies before I was born, but I'm not really an old movie guy.
It's just one that I've
never seen Gone with the Wind.
This is one that holds up.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I said, I think, especially if you like this, you'll like that. If you don't like this, you're not going to like that. This does feel like a Frank Capra movie from the and Tom Hanks read this, and he's like, oh, this is It's a Wonderful Life. Because they offered it to him first. It's like, this is It's a Wonderful Life for this generation. I think he's absolutely right.
What if Tom Hanks played Rick Kinsella?
I think it works. Tom Hanks is a great actor.
Yeah, he's a great actor. But was he a great actor yet, or has he just become a great
actor? So he had probably just done Big, right?
Yeah.
So he's probably coming off Big, got nominated.
This would have been
between
Big and Joe vs. Volcano. Or he probably did Joe vs. Volcano
instead of this.
Yeah.
Or Bonfire of Vanities or some other shitty movie.
I don't know. I mean, it had to be.
I mean, Costner is so great here. I don't want it to be anybody else. Even as great of an actor as Tom Hanks is. Costner.
Think about in 1988, 89, we were 9 and 10, mm-hmm. right? 1988, Bull Durham, 8 Men Out. This year, and within 2 months of each other, within 4 weeks of each other, Major League and Fielders, that's arguably, you can make the argument, the two greatest baseball movies ever made. They're up there. Major League is
not my two favorite, but
is my favorite baseball movie ever made. It's my favorite. I'm not saying it has to be yours, but it's my favorite. And this,
we'll talk about it next week.
This is yes, we are. This is either two. Yes, yeah, probably two. Yeah, and Bull Durham's great too, though. But Kevin Costner threw two.
And 8 Men Out's very good.
8 Men Out is fantastic. Now I just figured a whole lot of people hadn't watched that one, but it's very good.
Very
too.
Good.
Yeah. What a fucking time to be alive that was.
What a run.
Yeah,
and Andy Costner's in two of those movies.
Yep,
which is wild. I give him a lot of credit because I think a lot of people might not have done back to back baseball movies. I'm like, oh, like I don't want to be pigeonholed in this, but I think he saw how the roles are so different that obviously Ray's not a baseball player, and this movie is about more than just baseball. Like we talked.
Who's
about.
The other actor in two of those movies? Field of Dreams, 8 Men Out, Major League, and Bull Durham.
Is Riota in both? No.
Charlie Sheen.
He's in 8 Men Out and Major League.
He just sneaks into 8 Men Out, too. He's just there.
The cast is great.
It's an unbelievable cast.
Christopher Lloyd's in that. It's like a weird
John
cast.
Cusack. Yeah.
There's a lot going on with that movie.
Yeah.
I'd be really looking forward to covering that on this show because that's one that I think people don't talk about enough. It is very good.
I'm not misremembering. He did For the Love of the Game, too, right?
Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And, of course, Draft Day, which we talked about last week.
He has three.
Three baseball movies.
Three of the top 10 baseball movies, probably. Although I think For Love of the Game is the bottom of the top 10.
It
barely sneaks into my 10. But
I think that's pretty fair. I think I'm on the same page.
Yeah.
What do you give this movie out of 1 to 100?
Shit. You gave it a perfect 100 already?
I gave it 100 out of 100.
So this is the peak.
Yeah. Doesn't get any better for me for this. I love this movie. It hits.
What did I give Hoosiers? Anybody remember? 96, 98? I'm going to give it a 97 just to keep a little wiggle room just in case I pass it later. But it's phenomenal. And every time I watch it and for the 5 hours, the 2 or 3 hours after it, it's 100 of 100. Like it sits with you. It makes you feel better for watching. It makes you feel worse for watching. And like I don't even think about it right now. I don't have to watch it. But if you just say, hey, Dad, want to have a catch? Fuck. I'm done.
Oh. I just think about Moonlight Grant's feet and the rocks. That gets me going.
We didn't talk about that scene enough. I'm just going to say my favorite scenes from the movie because there's so many.
Yeah.
When she says the first great one is when she says, "Dad, there's a man outside in your yard." He's like, "What?" And then he looks out there and he's out. And the 5 minutes after that where he walks out there and he starts pitching to him.
Yeah.
And you see the balls just launched into the corn. That's way up there. I think Terrence Mann in the apartment trying to kidnap him to go to the Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
That's way up there. The car ride from Minnesota to Burt Lancaster and
all the Minnesota stuff.
All Minnesota, and then even continue because I think the car ride from Minnesota to Iowa where they're talking about his dad and he's telling Terrence Mann about it, and then they pick up Archie Graham. Just starting in Minnesota all the way through.
I was gonna
the rest
say
of the
once
movie.
In Minnesota, this film is so edited so well. It's only an hour 47.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie. I don't know how many times, 100 times probably. Yeah. I've never once bored for a second of it. Even like the worst scene probably is the book burning scene in the PTA. It's probably the weakest scene in the movie. Even then, it's not that long, and it happens fast enough. And
it is a key scene because, and I don't know why they did it. That's where he figures out it's Terrence Mann.
Yes.
So that scene has to happen for that reason. It could have been shorter. It could have been, I don't know why, the conflict with the woman.
Not as dramatic.
Not as dramatic. But if you think about it, the movie starts, and if you build it, he will come.
Yeah.
And then
the very first line.
From the next 5 minutes, we're building a baseball field. It never drags. It gets right into it. Joe Jackson shows up pretty quickly.
Yes.
And it's off and running. And, yeah, you're right. They show up in Minnesota. Well, you know what, though? I don't know when it's bad, because before that, they're in Boston. They got the apartment. Then they're at Fenway Park.
The Fenway Park scene's great.
And he said, what do you want? What do you want? I just want to be left alone. I want my peace. I want my life back. No, I mean, what do you want?
Yeah,
right. Oh, a dog and a beer.
A dog and beer.
Yeah, like that. And then he's dropping him back off the apartment, and somehow Terrence Mann crosses the road. I still don't know how he did that. But is Terrence Mann a ghost?
I don't think so. I think Terrence.
Okay,
Mann,
all
Terrence
right.
Mann,
all right.
Terrence Mann's legit. Costner's great, even in the scene in the car with these little things get me. It's like, what did the voice say? It's like, oh, tell the man he's done enough. And you can Costner's a good actor. You can tell he's lying. Obviously, we know he's lying, but yeah. Terrence Mann can tell he's lying. But he plays it off casually enough.
Well, because Terrence Mann is lying.
Right.
Because Terrence Mann saw it too.
Right.
But
Costner isn't. You can tell he's not being 100% honest there.
Yeah.
But it's very subtle.
Well, they're not being honest to each other, but they're at that point, you know, they're in this together.
Yeah.
And they're going, and it's almost like. It's almost like every relationship he has leads back to his dad.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess that's what it is, because we have the daughter that he'd do anything for. We have the supportive wife. We have Terrence Mann, who's the outsider that comes in, but he's always worshipped. That's who he's kind of worshipped. And now you get back to heart of the dad. I don't know. A 97 out of 100, and I might bump it up. I don't. It's phenomenal. It's been a significant part of my life as my favorite movie ever. And maybe this podcast might make me reevaluate exactly where I line things up, because we rewatched Hoosiers and we rewatched this. I got deeper and enjoyed this a little bit more than Hoosiers.
Like when I was in my 20s, I wasn't married. I you're kind of single. You're having fun. And like, but now I have a wife and I have a life here in New York. And you know, my dad's never met, just like his dad never met his wife, never met his kid. Yeah. It's like, oh man, to be able to, have my dad who's been gone so long meet my wife would be amazing. Like you see, obviously Ray gets that opportunity, and it's like, oh, that all that stuff kind of hits you. Said the older I get, the more this movie is just like, wow, like such an emotional heft.
Well, I'll get into it a little bit, but I had a dad that didn't want anything to do with me. He was on drugs, and he would never play ball with me. And my mom would hit balls to me in the yard and everything. But every now and then, once a year, he would come to my game, and I was just all I did was play catch. So that's happening as I'm 8, 9, 10 years old, and that's when this movie comes out. And you know, I never quite had a dad the way that Ray Kinsella, and it sounds like you. But that doesn't matter. You see it on screen, and it's hefty.
It's so powerful.
It's powerful. It's hefty. It's great. And you know, the way we're talking about it almost sounds like it's sad, and it's not. It's uplifting.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, like yeah. I'm not sad. I'm just happy that this character gets to have that opportunity, and it makes you feel good. Yeah, it is weird how like it does make you think of some sad things, but at the end of the day, like I never shut this movie off and I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm like so happy, but some like I kind of wish I had that a little bit, but it's never like I'm never like sad like Million Dollar Baby like sad crying. It's a weird cry.
It's an uplifting cry.
Yeah,
and I wonder when they made this movie. And they shot that final scene, and it's him throwing, and it's getting dark.
Oh, the lighting, the sky.
It's getting dark, and he's getting older, it's getting darker, and he's playing catch with his dad, and then they do the big, I call it a drone shot now, who knows what they do.
It's a pan out.
It's a pan out, and they show the enormity of everything, but the lighting, the time of day is perfect, everything. They had to know when they shot that. Like, we've got one of the all-time closing scenes.
Well, that's
an all-time closing scene.
Unbelievable. The director said they kept getting oddly lucky with the skies.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, they had great weather for a lot of this, and it was just, I guess the sky was just always, and you watch it in the background, especially through some of the Ray Liotta stuff, it's like, whoa, how did they do that?
Have you ever been to the field?
No, have you?
I've been to Iowa multiple times, and see, I went to Omaha for the College World Series last 2 years ago and stayed in Iowa. But the field is like in the southeastern corner, and Omaha, Nebraska is up in the top, is up in the left. So it's 4 or 5 hours mm-hmm. away. I thought about one day just going, but I've gotten close. I've just never gone.
I got to meet Dwyer Brown, who plays the dad. I went to I worked in minor league baseball selling signage, and we had a big minor league baseball kind of like a, I don't know, say, like a conference, if you will, among all the minor league baseball teams. And he came out and met with us. And he was a nice guy, very friendly.
It's crazy that he got to do a conference. He's in this movie for 2 minutes.
Yes, but he's but it's so memorable.
Yeah. So would you ever go to the fields?
Like, oh, something? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm surprised you haven't done that.
It's just so out of the way.
Yeah, Iowa's not exactly next door.
No. It was a situation. That's why I'd love to take a road trip one day and go to like Mount Rushmore and some of these things that are kind of out of the way, but I'm dying to see.
Well, that's in South Dakota.
I know, but I do a cross-country road trip. And there's like little things like Field of Dreams, Mount Rushmore. Like, there's things that like you have to go out of your way to go see, and that would be on that list for sure.
I love that the randomness of that list. What? Yeah, I want to go see Mount Rushmore. I want to go see Field of Dreams.
Those are all things that are not like.
No,
in the
I get it.
Random. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Don't holler at me.
I'm going to holler at you when you
don't,
say
don't holler at me.
I'm going to holler at you.
So that closes the book on Field of Dreams. Pleasant conversation right there.
That was such a great movie.
Yeah. The next one isn't.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
4 years later, in 1992... I think this is a greater Hollywood thing that I'd like to talk about because I love the idea of sports movies and how we don't – it's fascinating to me we don't get as many today. But back in the late 80s, early 90s, we got a shit ton of them.
Yeah.
But by 92, the quality of almost all of them, there's exceptions. But they I don't know if they were rushing them. I don't know if they were putting out bad ideas. But the quality of the sports movie in 92, that we got some bad ones.
Yeah.
The Babe being maybe the preeminent example of that. 92 also had White Men Can't Jump and A League of Their Own. A League of Their Own is a good movie.
I don't really like it as much, but it definitely is. It's a movie that at least has some quality to it. This has no redeeming quality.
This is a steaming pile of trash.
Awful.
And it's crazy because I don't know what makes it so bad. I don't think... I don't know what makes it so bad. I watched The Babe for the first time the other night. I'd never seen it.
Okay.
I think I started it back in the early 90s, and I just didn't get very far in it.
Don't blame you.
I think there's pieces of a good movie there. It looks like the 20s or the 10s. They do all that. There's nothing. They don't betray anything.
It looks like a shitty set.
They don't betray anything, though, I don't think.
Betray, like?
As far as the time period.
All right.
All right. They betray the story of Babe Ruth a lot.
Yeah.
You're mad. Are you okay?
This movie infuriates me.
You know what? I want you to take the lead on this.
It's a movie full of lies.
I didn't know you were snarling at this point.
Oh, I hate this movie. So I saw this movie in the theaters when I was, 12 when it came out. I was snarling at the end of this thing. I think I was texting you when I was watching. I'm like, this movie's making me angry. It's infuriating. It's just lie after lie. It's terrible performance. It's horrible direction. The sets look shabby. It's like a bad sound stage. This is just a lazy effort by everyone involved.
Lazy is a great way to put it.
And John Goodman is a great actor. He's so great in Roseanne. He's so great in the Coen Brothers stuff. He's even the Cloverfield movie that came out a few years ago. He's really scary, and he's a very good actor. This isn't his fault. This is a director probably didn't give enough takes, wasn't shooting him right. The script is abysmal. But it's the lies that make me so angry because they're lying about it. Like, he can't defend himself. He's dead. And it's a lie that kind of puts him in a bad... I'm not saying Babe Ruth's this great Mother Teresa figure, but...
Can we stop there?
Sure.
Before we talk about the movie about the Babe, which the movie, I don't know if you guys have picked up on this, it's about Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Former pitcher for the Red Sox and player slugger. For the Yankees, I think the most fascinating athlete in the history of American sports. I don't know. Maybe him, Muhammad Ali. I don't really know.
That's my list.
As far as the role he played, as far as what he did to and for his sport, he was larger than life. Babe Ruth has always – I'm not talking about the movie. Babe Ruth has always been fascinating to me. I read what I can on Babe Ruth. I get lost in his baseball reference. I love Babe Ruth. Everything he stood for, everything he was. So when they make a movie about Babe Ruth, I'm excited. I still don't think they made a movie about Babe Ruth.
No.
Because that's not what this is.
No.
But before we get into the movie, what are your thoughts on Babe Ruth, the person?
I would agree with everything you said, except I don't agree with everything he stood for. Babe Ruth was kind of not the greatest guy at times.
Stood for is a bad word. But when you think of the idea of Babe Ruth and everything that floods back into your memory, or everything that's it's a cavalcade of everything.
He's one of the, you know, the difference between him and Muhammad Ali is, like, you know, Muhammad Ali was around obviously during the television age, where Babe Ruth wasn't. So Babe Ruth really is kind of our last, like, Paul Bunyan type character, where you almost, it's almost kind of hard to believe some of his great feats. But luckily we had, you know, you have, there is some footage.
But even in 1925, Babe Ruth couldn't go to a corner of this country without getting recognized.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, like, like a larger than life figure that was a real person that also, like, was the biggest celebrity in America.
Yeah.
And, and you look at his stats, not only was obviously a great, maybe the greatest hitter ever, although he played obviously in, you know, during segregated times, but he would have been a Hall of Fame pitcher.
I looked at that the other day. You're talking about a full season. In 2 years, he had 45 wins. No, it was 28 and 27. He had 55 wins in 2 years, right?
Something like that. And he also, his postseason.
His ERA was 1.5.
I think he still has the lowest World Series ERA ever. It's like a wild, and no one's, obviously, because he has so many.
But when you say, when you say he didn't play in segregated times, and that is, or he played in segregated times, and that is correct. So it's hard to say he's the greatest hitter ever, because the numbers were a little different back then, too. But when he came up in the league, he changed the entire style and trajectory of the rest of the history of baseball. It doesn't look like it looks today if he doesn't exist, ever. He made the home run a weapon. He made the home run an accepted weapon. They changed the ball because of him. Like, everything that happened from 1920, when he really took off as a hitter, to the end of his career at 35, shaped the next 100 years of baseball, and that is inarguable.
Oh, absolutely.
There are people who say, could he play today? Who gives a fuck if he could play today? He played back then.
Like, yeah, you can't do that.
And if he didn't play back then, what you see today wouldn't be what you see today.
He out-homered teams. Like, there was, I think 1921, he out-homered most teams.
Yeah.
So most teams had less home runs than Babe Ruth did. And you're right. But by the end, you know, 1934 is the last good year. He wasn't out homering teams anymore because they changed what they were doing. They started, like, the whole game changed in those 15 years because of him.
All right, now we've set the stage of how much we
admire,
revere the idea of Babe Ruth.
Right.
This movie doesn't do that at all.
No.
This movie doesn't spend time telling you that this was a great man or an epic man. This movie just tells you this was a big fat piece of shit that hit the ball well, and everybody around him was a dickhead too.
And it's all weird lies.
Yeah.
The things that never happened for dramatic effect.
Give me a couple.
He went into the crowd at one point fighting fans.
So in this movie, in 1925, after he's been traded to the Yankees, he's been there 4 or 5 years, and he has a downturn in his career. In 1925, if you look at his stats, it was a down year. He only played like 80 games that year. But he had some illnesses in real life. He had some sicknesses. But in the movie, he had 5 or 6 suspensions, and it is hilariously played out in 2 scenes. The first scene is he's on the train going to spring training with all the Yankees, and Miller Huggins,
Miller Huggins
comes into his train car, and Babe Ruth gets mad at him, and Babe Ruth takes him outside to his train car balcony and holds him over the tracks to drop him and kill him. I'm sure Babe Ruth made Miller Huggins' life live in hell. I doubt this ever happened.
Actually, Babe Ruth loved Miller Huggins. Yeah. Miller Huggins was kind of the guy that started to set him straight, like, look, Babe Ruth was never going to be Mother Teresa, but Miller Huggins and the respect Ruth had for him was huge. When Miller Huggins died, Ruth wept.
When did Huggins die in that run?
McCarthy took over near in the 30s. Huggins,
so around 29,
maybe, around there.
But in 25, and Miller Huggins in real life always had trouble wrangling the Babe. Right?
Yes,
he would try to set him straight, and he would try to set him right. But it wasn't. I don't think it was the adversarial "I'm going to kill you" that this movie portrays. Like, he tries to kill Miller Huggins.
No, it was more that he felt bad for disappointing Miller Huggins.
And in the second scene is he's in a game. The fans are just ravenously booing him. I mean, just calling him everything under the sun. I'm talking about kids. They're throwing shit at him. This is why he's just slumping. That's all that's happening. He's slumping, and they're throwing stuff, and he gets out, and he comes back, and a fan says something he doesn't like. He grabs a bat, goes into the crowd, and not only hits the guy, fights the guy, wants to fight everybody in the crowd, and hilariously, cartoonishly, the crowd crowds on him. And knocks him to the ground, and he's fighting the whole crowd, and there's this shot, it's the most preposterous shot of the movie, of John Goodman laying at the bottom of that pile.
His face
and he's crying. He's crying. He's like, it's supposed to be the seminal moment where it's like, okay, he realizes he's a dick or something like that. And it's just the most pathetic Hollywood weird thing I've ever seen.
It's so bizarre. More lies at the end of the, well, we see that he goes to visit a kid in the hospital, which he never really went to the hospital, but whatever, that's kind of small. So he's going to hit two home runs for him. He actually ended up hitting three home runs in real life for this sick kid. Kid wasn't really sick in real life. He was injured, regardless. The end of the movie, the kid is an adult, sees Babe Ruth in his last game, which isn't true either, and kind of tried to give him like a pep talk, which never happened.
I'm just realizing I meant to fix this mistake, but I watched this movie the other night, and I fell asleep in the last 5 minutes.
Oh.
As he's hitting the three home runs for the Boston Braves.
Yes, which did happen.
I knew that, but I fell asleep during that, and I said, I'm going to go back before Thursday and make sure I knock out those last 5 minutes. I never did, so I apologize for that.
So you missed the adult version of this boy meeting Ruth in the – because Ruth then retires. So he hits the three home runs and just says, I quit, which didn't happen. He retired a week later. And then he goes in the tunnel as he's walking away, and the little boy, now a man, meets him. He's like, oh, babe, you know, you really helped me.
Yeah.
Which the kid did meet Babe when he died in 1948 to try to like give him a pet talk then, but it wasn't the day he retired.
So this also has, you know, when we talked about Hoosiers a couple weeks ago, and one of the sticking points was the awful character of Barbara Hershey. Babe's first wife in this movie is just a wretched person. Just a wretched woman. Just a not a happy woman at all.
No.
He gives her a farm. He when he's trying to hit on her, she's just dour and sad. And I don't know what he saw in her because he's got this whole city of women that will do whatever. And in real life, like he had a wife and he bought him a had a what Bill Lee say he was a happy pig farmer in Sudbury. Like, and it went sour because of what he would do in the nighttime.
Right.
But I'm not sure that woman was ever what this character portrays her as. I would hope she wasn't.
Yeah, and that's where it gets a little complicated too. Where this really should be an HBO miniseries. This should not be a 2-hour movie. That's the other problem. Is there's so much to Babe Ruth that if you told honestly, it would be a really interesting story.
You know, you ever read The Big Bang by Lee Montville?
No.
You ever read the one? There's a woman that wrote another one. I haven't. Jane Levy, I think, wrote a book about it. But I was reading The Big Bang by Lee Montville, and he said in his foreword. At one point, I was at 1,200 pages of Babe Ruth stories, and he wasn't in New York yet.
Oh Jesus!
I had written so much about, and he's still in Boston. Like I haven't gotten to the meet. That's how much Babe Ruth commanded, and everything. So when you try to tell the Babe Ruth story in 2 hours. It's almost impossible. But I don't think that's where the movie goes wrong.
That's what I understand. So to that point, though, why lie then? There's so much truth around it. That's so interesting. So, why have these lies?
I think in middle of 91, they got together and said, sports movies are hot. Let's do a Babe Ruth movie.
Yep.
We got 2 months to do it. All right. Give us 8 or 9 talking points and let's go. I mean, that's just what it feels like.
And they got a director who was well past his prime, Arthur Hiller, who was 69 when he directed this. He had his most famous movie, probably Love Story, with Tatum O'Neill and Ryan O'Neill and, I'm sorry, not Ryan. No, Ryan O'Neill and what's her other name?
No, I'd like to see you struggle with this.
No, I don't.
Because I don't know what
I'm frustrated
love
now.
Story.
Alan McGraw. I'm sorry.
Sure, Alan McGraw.
Steve McQueen's Alan McGraw. So, Ryan O'Neill and Alan McGraw. But Love Story was a huge, it was like the biggest movie in 1970. Huge hit. That was his peak. 22 years later, he's directing Babe, and the movie looks old, old like 1920. It feels old like an older movie. The pacing's horrible. The script is atrocious.
Script's bad.
It's really bad.
The
dialogue. He's at the first half of this movie. He's someone who you think might, you know, have a 65 IQ.
He's kind of Forrest Gump.
Without the charm.
Without the charm, yeah. He's just an idiot.
He doesn't understand anything.
He's like Tommy Boy Baseball Edition without the jokes. It's a lot. Now, I think a lot of the blame here, and not all of it. But I think John Goodman is just, you can see the check sticking out of his pants here. I don't think John Goodman committed himself to playing Babe Ruth at all. He clearly didn't learn how to swing a baseball bat.
No.
He didn't learn how to throw a baseball.
Nope.
I'm sorry. I know I'm overweight now. You couldn't have lost 30 pounds for this role? You couldn't have got down to at least husky? Like, he is distractingly fat. He is very, very fat. Now, John Goodman's a big guy. Fine. But I'm playing, I'm getting whatever million. Can I lose 30 pounds for this role?
He's playing Babe Ruth at 18 at one point in this movie.
Yeah.
He's basically the Babe Ruth in 1935, the 42-year-old Babe Ruth, the entire movie.
And John Goodman's, I'm going to say John Goodman's 6 foot tall, 330. You know, like he's a big guy. Yeah. He's always been a big guy. But shit, I mean, Jonah Hill can lose weight and change his life. Why can't we can lose 30 pounds, man? You're playing baseball. That's what I would have said.
He looks, the swing, it looks like everyone's a pop up. Like the way he swings.
Yeah, they have to really edit his swings. Yeah. They have to, like, he'll hit a long drive to right field. You can clearly tell that was a soft line drive that went over the third baseman's head. At one point, they have these wide shots, and it's just clearly a fake baseball. Where it's just wide shots of pitcher throwing to him, and it's clearly a digitally edited baseball in there. I don't know why they did that. Like,
they also play Babe Ruth as much less athletic than he really was. Like,
he could run, yeah.
And at the end, like 1935, yeah, he was kind of a, you know, he's kind of a big mess. He's 42 years old. He still was playing the outfield. And yet, in the movie, they have, when he hits a home run, they have this like weird pinch runner thing where he gets to first base and he tags a runner who then runs the rest of the way for him, or if the home runs.
Yeah, and then there's a couple times been a lot in where he just falls coming around third base.
He swings, he falls down.
Yeah. I thought the relationship with Lou Gehrig was crazy, too.
It didn't make any sense.
That didn't happen in real life at all. Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig were, if not that, not best friends, they were friendly, right?
They respected each other.
They respected each other.
They were never friends. I mean, Lou Gehrig was a Christian guy.
Yeah.
They never hung out, but there's a lot of respect there.
They needed each other, and they got together, got along on the field. But in the movie, Babe Ruth treats him like shit for about 5 years.
He doesn't even know his name.
The most preposterous thing that happens in the entire movie, you know what it is? When Lou Gehrig's a rookie or something, and he's hitting home runs, and Babe's hitting home runs, and Babe Ruth, John Goodman, says, "Hey, Rook, stay out of those right field stands.
It's crazy.
If you want to hit home runs, hit them to center and left. Right field stands are Babe Ruth territory." Like, what? That's not how baseball works.
No.
It fundamentally doesn't know who Babe Ruth was, this movie. It fundamentally doesn't know how baseball works. It fundamentally doesn't know how humans work. Because as much as this movie right here had so many good actors playing good roles, no actors stand out, and all the roles are bad in this one.
Yeah, you're absolutely
Tell
right.
me a good role. Tell me a good actor in that movie other than John Goodman.
Maybe James Cromwell, who plays Brother Matthias in the beginning.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he's in the movie for like
90 seconds.
2 minutes.
Yeah, he's yeah.
Can I talk about another lie? Just made me mad about the Gehrig thing. So in 1927, that's when Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs famously.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Gehrig and Ruth are on a home run chase, which they kind of were. But at one point, the guy, this is just another needless lie. It's like, Gehrig has 14 home runs, Ruth has zero. And I stopped my tracks, but that can't be right. I looked it up. When Gehrig hit his 14th home run, Ruth already had 18.
Yeah.
Like, why lie about that? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's also a time where at the end of that chase, they go from, I think they go, Gehrig has 45, Ruth has 44. The next scene is, and Ruth hits his 60th home run of the year, Gehrig has 47.
That's exactly
which,
right.
Those are the numbers that are right. But
no, but they weren't right. Well, their final numbers
the journey
right.
didn't get.
The journey didn't get right.
It was that was the wrong
no,
journey. Yeah,
of course it was. It doesn't make any sense.
It gets everything wrong. It willingly gets everything wrong. John Goodman sucks as Babe Ruth, and it's crazy because 1992 John Goodman was something the fuck else. I feel like if you how do I put this? If you put competent directors to say Ron Shelton, I'm just picking out of a guy
sure.
that's done baseball.
Yeah.
Ron Shelton, and I don't know an actor you could play. You give me a competent director, competent actors, you can make one hell of a movie about this man. It's a shame it's never happened.
It's a real shame. Goodman himself has come out in the more recent years and admitted that he didn't give his all in his performance.
No, he didn't give any,
that,
a little
that
bit
he,
of it.
He
yeah.
wishes you could have had a redo on this one. He's like, this is my one I kind of shit the bet on.
And I think back then, I think, if I remember, like King Ralph, and then Goodman was in bang, 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 movie. So he probably didn't have a lot of time. He probably didn't have a lot
right.
of time.
And they're doing it during when Roseanne is off,
yeah.
you know, their hiatus. Same with King Ralph. So you only have, you know, a few months to kind of make this happen. My biggest fault, I know the John Goodman, you're harder on Goodman. Maybe Goodman's horrible in this, but the script is so bad. It really made me angry.
Yeah, nothing's good about it.
No.
I think better writers, better director, better actor. Better movie. That makes a lot of sense, but it's a shame that Babe Ruth doesn't
the
have
the first
a better
wife
movie.
Stuff is even interesting. There's even weird lies there. So he was married to that first wife, who was very religious and
yeah.
wouldn't agree to a divorce.
Yeah.
Then
Helen.
is that her name?
Helen's the first wife, and Claire's the second one.
So, he, like I said, couldn't agree on divorce. She mysteriously dies in a fire.
Yeah.
3 months later, he marries, was it Claire?
Claire, yeah.
And some people have said that, oh, he murdered his wife. He had something to do with it. You know, it's a pretty big allegation, but like, but there's an interesting story there. This ends up, I won't divorce my wife, and then he switches his, changes his mind, he does marry her, and then the first wife dies. What are we doing?
Yeah. In fact, like, she's standing by, the way the real life story unfolded was, Claire was an acquaintance earlier in his life or something, and then came back into his life later.
Right.
In this movie, Claire's there the whole time.
Yes.
She's just always there. Even when he's married, she's like sitting a row behind Helen at the games.
But Kelly McGillis stinks. Can we just say, she stinks in Top Gun. She stinks in this. She stinks. But maybe a nice person. Lousy.
Again, tell me an actor who doesn't stink in this movie. You can't do it.
Yeah, I feel bad. Was it Trini Alvalerdo? She plays the first wife. I think this is a thankless role. I think there's nothing you could do there. I don't know how you...
Yeah, she's just a shrew. She's just a...
But, like, I don't know how you make that work.
She's just a miserable piece of crap in this movie. I guess... Now here was a character I had never... Because I've read the Babe Ruth story a lot. Who's Jumpin' Joe even supposed to be?
Yep, I looked that up. It's Joe Dugan, who never played with Ruth and the Red Sox.
Right.
He did join the Yankees in 1923 midseason. That part's true. But they were never teammates. You never would have been that happy to see.
Yeah, and the way he unveiled it, Babe Ruth hits a home run. Okay, let me go back. Jumpin' Joe is when Babe Ruth's a rookie. Jumpin' Joe is a veteran that takes him under his wing.
With the Red Sox.
And with the Red Sox back in 1914, 15, somewhere in there. Jumpin' Joe has a family, but he takes care of Babe Ruth, and Babe Ruth takes care of him. He spends some of his money on him. And then, why's your name Jumpin' Joe? Because I jump wherever the money is. Okay. Not real.
Free agency didn't exist.
Not real, but sure, whatever.
Yep.
So Babe Ruth goes to the Yankees, and he takes over New York. And he's in a game. He hits a home run. He's circling the bases. Jumpin' Joe walks out of the stands, I believe?
Yep.
In a full trench coat.
Right.
Full trench coat. Just walks around the Yankees teammates in a full trench coat. Jumpin' Joe, what you doing here? He opens his trench coat, reveals a Yankees uniform, says, I jump, baby. And I'm like, what? Why? Even in your wildest dreams, if you're doing a movie about the fantasy of Babe Ruth, how'd you come up with that? I don't the character Jumpin' Joe. Yeah, it's all a lie. It's all a lie.
It's all a lie.
Yeah,
and it made me mad.
There were nuggets of truth interspersed, like his greatness, of course. Although I don't think it gives you enough of his greatness. It kind of glosses over a lot of his greatness. But like, he did desperately want to be a manager at the end of his career. That's a real thing.
Yes.
He did feel betrayed by the Yankees.
Yes, he did.
Who he built, who he gave everything to.
Mm-hmm.
That's all true. Like, some of the angst that he faces at the end of this movie is real. He wanted to be the manager, and they wouldn't let him do it, and that kind of soured him on everything.
But they even fucked up the greatness. So, for instance, in this movie, he gets paid, he gets a raise, and he's joking with, I think it's Kelly McGillis. He's like, oh, I make more money than the president. I had a better season than him. Which doesn't really make any sense in 1922 because Calvin Coolidge was a popular president.
Well,
how it really happened was, it was right after the Depression he got a raise, and he had a better year than Herbert Hoover.
Correct. And they, I think they even did that. They did that right when he got to New York. Right. He wasn't quite Babe Ruth, the icon. He wasn't
making more than
above the president in 1920. In 1930, he was.
But the joke doesn't make any sense. The reason it's funny is because they just entered a depression.
You know what doesn't go anywhere at all, and I don't know why it's there? When he gets traded to New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to New York, and he goes into the party for the first time, and everybody sees him. Babe Ruth. And don't go back there. There's a room full of perceived mobsters, right?
Yeah.
That's what's kind of what they – don't go back there. Those are bad guys. And he goes anyway, and there's a woman at their table, and he sits down and hits on the woman. It's Claire.
Yeah.
And he sits and hits on the woman, and the guys just sit there, and they give him that mobster look. No idea why it's in the movie because they don't say a goddamn thing about it.
Not only that, but one of the mobsters was Al Capone.
What's it, Al Capone? It had the name Capone.
The third mobster introduced himself as Al Capone, and you're like, holy shit, what?
Yeah.
And then it just there's no reason.
Al Capone,
for it.
By the way, famous New Yorker.
Yes, right. Yeah. Always in New York.
Very famous New Yorker.
The whole thing doesn't make any sense. Why would he?
Yeah.
He met Al Capone. Like, why even include that in there? It's so bizarre. It's,
also, I think by 1920, Capone's already a thing, isn't he?
I think he was bigger in the 30s, wasn't he?
Was he? Okay.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
What does he say when he walks in that party? Yeah, prohibition's in New York, but so's the babe. Let's drink.
Yeah, right.
What? It's
I hate this movie. I hate this movie more than
anything. I agree with John Goodman. I wish John Goodman got another shot at this.
I don't know. I
give him Ron Shelton. Give him the writers behind.
I want a TV show. I want 12 hours on this. I don't want a
You want a Netflix arc about.
Yep.
I have a question. Does it need to be 100% accurate for you to enjoy it?
No, but I can't have. Like, this lies. This lies about who he was as a person.
Maliciously?
No, I feel like it does. It kind of like it hurts his character.
He's a white man's playing him, which is right off the bat.
Right. Very controversial. No, it doesn't need to be 100% accurate. I understand you're always going to
have... I will never watch this movie from the way you guys are describing it, because it sounds like it's just terrible outside of the lies. But
so we've done four bad movies. Eddie, Ed, The Babe, and you weren't here last week. And I assume you've seen Draft Day.
Yeah. I assume
you haven't seen Ed or Eddie. I don't hate Draft Day either.
I have seen Ed, but that's like when I was a kid. Yeah. Eddie, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend you see this one. And anybody out there, live vicariously through us. If you want to go see it and check it out how bad it is, go ahead. But it ain't great.
No, it's real bad. I didn't hate Draft either. I just didn't like it. This I hate.
I don't hate this as much as you. I don't like it, and it's not good. But you viscerally hate. Like, it bothers you. It's pissing you off.
It made me angry.
It didn't piss me off.
Ed is a worse movie, I guess, from just the quality. And just like what it's doing, it's just so terrible.
Ed was the best first movie, because it's actually just not a well-made. It's just a bad everything. Everything about it's bad.
But like Ed, I can watch it. Like,
but you can watch it.
It's the same kind of thing we ran into. Like, if you told me we had to rewatch one of them right now, Ed or The Babe, I would pick Ed every day of the week again. Like, Ed is so much more enjoyable
Ed's
than this.
Ed's breezy compared to this.
Oh, this is just... Eddie had some moments, like, when Walt Frazier's jersey got on fire. Like, that was kind of funny. Like, I didn't, like, walk away... I walked away kind of befuddled by Eddie, but I wasn't, like... I didn't, like, hate it. It was a drag. This is just awful. I'm going to give this a 12.
So you went from 100 to 12. That's a difference of 88. It's going to be hard to ever top that.
Right.
I'll be honest. I was expecting lower than 12.
Well, I gave Ed an 8.
And that's just... saying this
is pretty low.
This is at least Ed's just fundamentally poorly made.
Yeah.
And this actually looks like it was made by Hollywood, even though it was a lower end.
Yeah.
That looks like it was made by art students or students.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is like a made for TV movie where the other one, you're right, it's like a bad college film.
You give it a 12. I'll give it a 20.
So you gave Eddie around that, didn't you?
I would say these are very comparable. Very comparable. Very comparable. I probably have watched both of them for the last time in my life.
Oh God, I hope so.
In fact, that might be my mission on the show. Every bad movie we watch is the last time I'll ever have to watch it.
Well, I told myself that when I was 12, leaving the movie there. I'm like, well, I don't need to watch that again.
And that's the first time you've seen it since?
Oh yeah. 31 years later.
I don't know what happened to me that I didn't watch it at night too. I think it might have been one of those summer rentals where I'm 13, I'm home by myself all day. My mom takes me to the movie gallery, and I get a movie. I get Babe, and I get it home. I put it in, and it doesn't hold my interest, and I just get up, play video games, go outside, stuff like that.
I was trapped. This movie came out so long ago my father was alive. That's how long ago this movie came out. Yeah. And, I was trapped in the theater.
Before we go, we got to do the trade, and give me my 1992 box office mojo for when this movie came out.
Why don't you do your trade? I'm really struggling with the trade here, because
I don't know.
One movie that's perfect, and one movie that I hate everything about.
I don't know how you... The problem is,
my trade's a cop out. So
it is a cop out. The problem is, your trade is you want to put Babe Ruth in Field of Dreams as part of that group of players, right? Somewhere.
No,
in there?
No. I wasn't gonna do that.
Your trade's a cop out. Then, gosh, what can you do? What can you do? Because there's nothing of value in this movie at all,
right?
And everything has value here. Okay. Give me Archibald Moonlight Graham from this movie. Put him on the team with Babe Ruth.
Young Archie.
Young Archie, the player.
Okay.
You know, maybe he's probably 30 by the time Babe Ruth gets there. But he's a guiding light because he's got his head on his shoulders. He could go home and be a doctor whenever he wants, but he's got his head on his shoulders, smart guy. And give me the Lou Gehrig who is wildly mistreated in this movie. And I will say the way Lou Gehrig, his demeanor, I think they do that okay. Like, he's not bothered by anything, or he's staunch. He's he's all this. Although he's a rookie and they are already calling him the Iron Man. That's crazy.
Yes.
That's weird.
Very strange.
So give me Lou Gehrig, and I don't believe in this very heartily. Give me Lou Gehrig for Archibald Moonlight Graham.
So you do characters. I do actors.
Whatever.
So I'm going to trade James Cromwell from this movie.
Okay.
I'm going to put him as...
Who are you dumping here?
I'm going to... You know the guy they buy the beer from at Fenway Park?
Just the guy who's in there for 1 second?
Yeah. Because I rather...
You didn't even say anything.
That's fine. I just like James Cromwell. I'll have him there. Because this makes this movie even a tiny
okay, you're doing
better.
Actors. You're doing actors.
And
okay.
Then I'm going to put that guy here because like this movie sucks already. Might as well have... Like, so this makes, maybe makes Field of Dreams even like a smidge better. And this I don't care.
You just have James Cromwell standing behind the... What do you want? Dog and a beer.
Yeah.
Guy doesn't even say anything.
I like
why, at least make him. At least make him one of the Minnesota people.
I know. I love those people because it seems so authentic. I don't want to ruin that. I don't want to touch anything with Field of Dreams. Field of Dreams is perfect. It's a work of art. It is my favorite thing in the world.
Make him one of the brothers' law partners or something. Just sitting at the table.
Maybe you know, James Cromwell can play the mom. You know, Annie's mom.
Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't be. Make people feel foolish. It's rude or something. All right. So here's what you could have seen if you went to the theaters when Babe came out.
When did this come out?
April 17th, 1992.
April 17th, 1992. So I think White Man Can't Jump might still be in the theaters.
It absolutely is. It was number two that week. In its fourth week in release.
92, April. So League of Their Own is probably coming out about a month later. 92.
If you cross your legs right now, we can replicate number one.
Batman. Oh, Basic Instinct.
Yep.
So Batman Returns is probably
coming
out later.
Hey. What? Whew. It's getting hot in here.
Basic Instinct 1, White Man Can't Jump 2, what's 3?
Basic Instinct 1, Beethoven, which is the first movie I ever brought a girl to. Made $5.9 million.
You know what? It's crazy.
The dog movie?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy?
You too?
No. Oh. The first movie I ever brought a girl to, Beethoven's second in 94.
Wow.
I my first date for a movie, I was 15, I had my license, was Beethoven's second in 94. That's crazy.
Yeah. My date, I was 12. It didn't go particularly.
Mine was actually a date date.
Yeah. Mine was not really a date.
What was four?
Four was Sleepwalkers, which is a terrible Stephen
Kiefer
King adaptation.
Sutherland?
No, it's no one.
All right.
I don't think. Unless I'm getting it wrong. No, I'm right. It's this bad Stephen King adaptation. And then five is The Babe.
What's six, seven, eight, nine?
Deep Cover.
Nothing.
First week in release. City of Joy. I don't know. First week in release. Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Yeah, that's a Disney movie. Disney, that's an animated movie.
Number nine, in its 10th week in release, one of the best comedies of the decade, Wayne's World.
Okay.
And number 10.
Time. Say what number 10 is.
Val Kilmer's movie, Thunderheart.
You got Wayne's World as one of the best comedies of the decade.
Of the 90s, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
When you say one of the best comedies of the decade, top five?
I don't know. I haven't. I won't reveal that yet. I'm making a list, of course.
Dumb and
top
Dumber,
100 movies of the 90s.
Office Space, Dumb and Dumber.
Those are in there as well.
The Mask.
Not on my top 100
list. Ace Ventura?
Not on my top 100 list.
Comedy, Austin Powers?
I don't know if it came out in time, but it
did. 97. One. Came out nice.
Oh, then it did not make my list.
Austin Powers, the first one?
Yeah, it did not make my list.
And the second one, honestly.
The second one's pretty good, but the first one's
I'm
phenomenal.
Just exhausted by him. Just exhausted.
But not in 97 you weren't. Nobody was exhausted by
no,
him.
No, but I'm doing it now.
You literally have him in Wayne's World.
Oh, Wayne's World is great.
I Think I Married an Axe Murderer.
That's actually, Till I Married an Axe Murderer is a good movie.
Wayne's World 2 isn't terrible.
It's underrated. I wouldn't say it's great, but Wayne's World 2 is
I'm missing
bad.
A lot of good comedies.
There's a lot in there. But you have to just, every week I do the blog, and people then get
something
mad at
about
me.
Something about Mary?
That might be in there.
So, would you stop being coy?
I'm being coy. I do this list
We're never releasing this, so
that's
who
true.
Gives a shit?
You're not wrong.
So the people are going to be watching this in...
I don't even hit record, to be honest.
People are going to be watching this in July. Why are they wearing hoodies?
Yeah.
Because we recorded it in the winter. All right. You can finish
look
it.
How thin Brandon is, they'll say.
No, they'll say, look how fat he was. Because he's lost so much. He's a fucking Greek god now.
No, it went the other way. With
I want to
fuck
him.
I don't know if you missed the joke.
I want to have
other
sex
way.
With him.
So next week,
we're doubling up on baseball again.
Yeah.
And this, I had to fight for this one.
You did.
I had to fight for this one because he did not want to do it.
I didn't.
But we are doing Major League, one of my favorite movies ever made, and Major League Back to the Minors.
Which skips over
two. It skips over two. He doesn't like that. He wanted to just do direct sequels.
Tell the story in its entirety.
Tell the story in its entirety. But this is not about telling stories of movies. This is about telling the best and the worst sports movies. Major League 2 is neither the best nor the worst. It's just kind of there. Major League is one of the best, and Major League Back to the Minors is fucking atrocious.
So that will be what we cover next week?
Theoretically, if this ever comes out, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, for us, though, I'm talking to the imaginary people.
All right. So if you're by the time you're watching this, President Trump is back in office. Let's see. You've just watched the third Avatar movie,
and I've passed away.
Chris Klimmer's been dead for a week. So congratulations to everybody. All right.
Thank you for watching Double Play. For Brandon Walker, I'm Chris Klimmer, and we'll see you
next week, maybe.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.